Welcome to Think Bike, the podcast about all things motorcycle and the voice of motorcycle safety and awareness in Alberta. Think Bike is brought to you by the Alberta Motorcycle Safety Society, powered by Moto Canada. Let's ride Canada-wide. Your host is Leanne Langlois.
On today's podcast, we're going to be discussing the new things in 2024 with our very special, always first guest now friend, Patrick Lambie of Inside Motorcycles Magazine. How are you, Patrick?
I am fantastic. Thank you. How are you?
I am great. I love having you on as like the first official guest. We've now started this trend. And we will continue for as long as we can, because you do have an inside edge on the new things and stuff. So before we get into that, what's new at Inside Motorcycle since we last chatted?
Well, there's lots new. Probably the biggest thing is that Inside Motorcycles is going to now, as of 2024, be digital only. It's just a changing world. When we go and ride different bikes, and 90% or more of the journalists who are there are working for websites. So they're filing their story when they're on the plane. So 6 weeks later, when our story comes out on the newsstands, it's kind of lacking in relevance.
Old news.
Yeah, and then the reality is, you know, with the cost of printing and postage, and then advertisers want digital, it was a reality that was sooner or later going to arrive, and it has arrived. We're excited about it. I was just literally minutes ago finishing up some videos that we shot at the Toronto Motorcycle Show, so it opens up a lot more content for us, and for our, I still call them readers, I haven't figured out what to call them yet, but the people who follow us, it's a lot more content we can deliver and a lot more, variety. So I'm excited. So
is that still then under like a subscription, or is it gone like fully open to the public and you don't have to pay for it?
You do not have to pay for it. You go to insidemotorcycles.com. That's where all the information is, whether it's written reviews, news releases, race reports, video interviews, everything is there, as well as links to all of our different social media accounts, including Facebook, and I want to call it Twitter, but it's not, it's X, and Instagram. That's so insidemotorcycles.com is the easiest way to get the information.
Which is awesome, because you're right. Like now it's going to be more like on top of what you guys are doing, and it'll be out there right away and you won't be behind. When everybody was print, everybody had the same thing. So, and I think that I heard about that now that we have the bike shows back and things are out there and people are talking about things. And I heard about that and I was very excited because, so what do you call them? I mean, there's that age old thing of subscribers. People think, oh, I got to pay for it. So do you call followers? Do we give them a cool little nickname like insiders? Like, I don't know. Well, you've got to give them a name.
It's all kind of working itself out as we go, but it's going to take a little bit of time.
Yep. And I mean, everybody's under the same umbrella for that, but I think we should come up with a fun name for Inside Motorcycle supporters. Okay, let's jump into this, because with the return of the Moto Canada Motorcycle and Power Sports shows, we really got to finally see most of new things coming out for 2024 firsthand. We were missing some big people at the shows. I think BMW, Indian, Kawasaki, Ducati were missing, to name four big brands, but the rest of them were there. What was new and exciting for you this year for 2024? Because I got mine, but I want you to share first.
Well, let's see. Let's start with Harley Davidson. They've done some pretty cool things. Last year, they rolled out their CVO, their custom vehicle operations lineup, It had a lot of cool things. It's got like a 12-inch screen. You know, there are no more gauges. It's this massive digital screen, bigger than in most people's cars. You know, and some more improvements on their rider safety enhancements and everything. And probably one of the most exciting things they did was this year for 2024, all of that comes standard on just their base model Road Glide and Street Glide. So seeing, you know, the rider enhancements used to be about a $2,400 upgrade. That's just now included. So seeing that transition very quickly down through the lineup, when we all rode the CVO models last year, we were impressed, but everybody talked about, you know, hopefully this is going to make it into what I would call the more affordable lineup of the bikes, and they did. So that's actually really exciting to see them do that. At the same time, you know, they continued with their CVO lineup this year. You know, in the US in particular, the King of the Baggers is a big deal. And, you know, that's where Moto America is racing Harley Davidsons. It's become one of the most followed classes. And Harley Davidson's been paying attention because this year they rolled out the CVO Road Glide ST, which is an exciting bike. I actually rode it a few weeks ago on a racetrack. It is fun. It is probably the most powerful tune just to go fast and accelerate quickly Harley that has come off the manufacturers, you know, off the production line. So on that front, you know, it's neat to see them continue to evolve, but also see how quickly they've got that technology rolling down into the rest of the brand kind of thing.
So I was looking at one real close at the Edmonton show with my friend James McCarthy, works for Edmonton Harley here. And he was showing me, like, I can't remember which one, but one of them had like, you could just adjust the shocks on the fly pretty much. Like it was just right there and available to you. Mm-hmm. I thought that was something that was really neat because shocks are always dependent on how much weight you're carrying and what your purpose for riding is. So to just to be able to just hop off and adjust, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they've done that. They've always had, you know, the remote adjustment available for preload, which is, you know, so if you're loading up the bags, if you got a passenger, etc. But, you know, that one with the remote adjustment, that's where it's really taking it to the next level of suspension performance. Yeah, and it's exciting. I think Harley, not to pick on them, I think they've been kind of dormant for a while. So it's neat to see them finding their way. You know, well, they did, you know, come out with the CVO Pan America. They really seem to be refocusing on their core business, you know, the large, they call it the Grand American Touring Machines, and they do it well. You know, no disrespect to other brands, but they invented that class and they do it better than anybody else. So that's very exciting.
Awesome. What else have you seen from other brands that got you excited for this year?
You know, not so like this year in particular, Suzuki has, you know, they came out last year with their new 800cc parallel twin, and they continue to leverage it, which is obviously a great business decision, but also it's a really good motor. You know, so we saw it initially come out in the V-Strom, even though there was an argument kind of parallel twin being a V-Strom, but it's a great engine. Mark Duskowski, who's our off-road editor, wrote it, loved it. You know, so that was seeing that engine come across. You know, now they've got, they did a naked bike, now they've done a sport bike. Again, a lot of the brands, it seemed during COVID with supply chains and everything, were fairly dormant, but now there is a little bit of excitement coming from them, which is, it's exciting to see, and I look forward to seeing what else comes out. You know, there was at the Toronto show, Royal Enfield came and unveiled the new Bullet 350, And, you know, Royal Enfield, I've ridden a few of their bikes recently. And when I have to admit, when I first started riding them, I was kind of like, you know, this is a small little upstart brand, but, you know, in a year, they sell more bikes than Harley, Ducati, BMW, and KTM combined. You know, they're actually one of the biggest manufacturers in the world of motorcycles. And, you know, at that point, like, they're bringing their Bullet 350 to Canada for $5,800, you know, price point. And on top of that, they probably have, I'd have to say, one of the best marketing programs as far as targeting new riders. You know, everybody talks about how you need to get those new riders involved, but you don't see a lot of change in the marketing. So it's exciting to see them coming through with that. You know, Yamaha has done some cool things with their Tenere 7. You know, some would say they're superficial, but, you know, putting in better displays, better windscreens, etc. You know, BMW, while they were not at the shows, you know, they're new. They've now gone to the R1300 GS. And it's more than just an engine. You know, they did a great job realigning the bodywork and the suspension and everything and getting the weight also reduced, but also putting it where you need it to be. So, yeah, there's a lot of exciting things coming out this year, a lot of engineering. You know, last year, Kawasaki really pushed the envelope with their new Ninja 400RR. You know, and now there's actually going to be a spec series in CSPK with that bike. So it's exciting times. I think it feels like after that dormant period, everybody is coming to the forefront. KTM's got a ton of new bikes coming out, including a Duke 990, which is someone who rides a Duke. That's very exciting. But yeah, that's so what did you see at the show that you said was your favorite?
Oh, well, come on now, you know, I'm pretty brand biased when it comes to me. So I was, although I did go around and see a lot of different things, like the Coves, the, like all these new things that are coming out, which is really cool because those are built in Alberta. Like that's an Alberta based company. And we're hoping to have Josh on the show to kind of explain that. So that was kind of neat. But my heart always lies with Triumph. And I remember being at the Edmonton show, being very excited to see the new 400 scrambler and the 400 speed and or the speed 400. And it was funny because I sat on the scrambler because I have a 900 and the thing is taller than my 900. Which I found really interesting. So I'm like, maybe not the right one for me. But I sat on the Speed 4 and it was like very comfortable. And I think it would be fun to bomb around in. But for me, it was more of like, thank God Triumph finally came up with something for like an entry level, like to attract those like fresh new riders. That's something fun and still has some good power to it that can get people going and then move into like the higher CC bikes. But the one that really blew me away, and I looked right at Ian McKinstry on the Sunday morning because it didn't arrive until 10 minutes before closing on the Saturday night, was the dirt bike. Mm-hmm. That, and I looked at Ian and I said, and he's president of Triumph Canada, and I said, isn't that a little off-brand for us? Because it's like a full dirt bike. And he's like, we got to get in there. We got to be competitive in everything. And it was such a cool looking bike. I'm interested because like you're a KTM guy, you know, things like that. What was your impression of that particular dirt bike?
I think, well, initially, you know, when they first announced it, you know, I mean, they had Ricky Carmichael come on board to, you know, design an off-road, a motocross bike. And the fact that they did that showed they were pretty serious. You know, I'm sure Mr. Carmichael doesn't do this for free. You know, but he also comes with a pedigree and knowledge that they can build a serious dirt bike. You know, when you talk to different manufacturers, the bikes that have been selling more than anything are the dirt bikes, you know, whether they're trail bikes, motocross bikes, et cetera. So for a company like Triumph to move into it, I think is, I wouldn't say it's survival, but it's really smart, because then it does how you were saying it, it's an entryway. It's like a gateway drug kind of thing. Like it gets, you know, people start riding that. And then when they do want to start riding on the street or whatever, they have that brand affiliation. And it's just a way of continuing to build and secure market share. So, I mean, the bike itself is a quality bike, and it's already done a couple races in the US. It's done well. So it's not a joke by any means. It's a serious bike. The other bike, I don't know if you saw, but Can-Am finally had their prototype electric bikes out on the show floor, which looks super cool. And it'll be neat to see Can-Am back on two wheels. Not only that, but to be with an electric bike, I think will be very cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, just to go back to Triumph for 1 second, then we'll go back to the electrics, because there was a lot of electric going on at the show. But Triumph isn't new to dirt. I mean, between the Tiger and the Scrambler being a dual sport and stuff, it's nothing new. It's just, it is such a true dirt bike. And I'm not used to that out of like my brand, but it just shows the versatility of like, Triumph, literally, you can stay within that brand and ride anything, any type of, except for, the Rocket 3 would be a pretty close competition to like a bigger bagger, but it's still not a bagger. Mm-hmm. But the electrics, oh my God, there were so many electrics that were there of like all different kinds. And I think were the ones from France electric as well. I can't remember. Like there was that one booth that was, they were from France.
I'm trying to remember.
I know, my God, I should have done better research on this. They had some really bright colors.
Yeah, but Zero was there.
Yeah, Zero was there, like so much electric. Do you think that is, because I know that there's this thing in Canada where they want to get rid of like manufacturing gas-powered vehicles by a certain year, but they never mentioned motorcycles. So is like, I know we're all moving towards electric, but how far off are we on that being like all you can have?
You know, it's like, we could do an entire podcast just about electric vehicles. You know, the reality is, yes, there's all these regulations coming. But you know, the recharging times are still not very viable. Well, the infrastructure has built up dramatically. You know, you go by places that have, there's a shopping mall here has charging stations, and you can go by there early on a Sunday morning and they're already lined up. And then there's, you know, like the state of California has repeatedly said that they don't have the infrastructure of like on a power grid to even begin to support this. So it's a great target. I love electric, by the way. I've tested Zeros. I tested, you know, the Harley Livewire. There is nothing like the acceleration and the pure torque, because you have 100% of torque at one RPM. They're amazing, and they're starting to build real motorcycles around it. It still comes down to range. The Livewire, if you rode it aggressively, you couldn't get 100 kilometers out of it. So it becomes a little bit of a challenge as far as, you know, even living here, if you wanted to say, go out to Bragg Creek, you know, for a rip through the twisties, you're not going to be able to get home. You know, and I only live 50 kilometers from Bragg Creek kind of thing. So there's limitations. So I think as the recharging technology improves and the battery technology improves, I think motorcycles have a better chance of, you know, their batteries are so small. When we ice race to Zero, and we can literally just swap the batteries. You can't really do that with a car. But again, that's where I said we could do a whole podcast about electric. I do think, you know, for like BMW just came out with the CE02, which is like an urban scooter that is electric, I think it'll do fantastic. I don't know if North America is ready for it, but I think in Europe it'll do great. So yeah, electric is coming. There's no doubt. You see more and more of it. There's some obstacles in the way that have to be sorted out.
Well, we did see a lot of that kind of obstacles in like Charlie and Ewan's Long Way Up on like, you know, the live wires and, you know, going through the cold, going through, you know, whatever the distance they could go. And so, but I think that was also premature to any real infrastructure kind of even attempting to be in place when they filmed Long Way Up. But it was definitely eye-opening. And then you look at here in Alberta, like over the winter, we had that 10-day period of minus 35 to minus 40 weather. And we're being asked to like, really be mindful of power usage because all of a sudden now with all the electric vehicles out there, our grid can't handle it. And this is what we do in the winter. Yeah. So yeah, we've got a long way to go before I think that can be a reliable technology. It's exciting, but we can't go there if it's not going to work 100%.
Yeah. I mean, it is, and don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of electric power and electric vehicles. I think I'm not sure that we can hit the targets that have been established, but you know, we'll see what comes. It's like anything tech, and you know, what the bike shows did show was technology is moving along at a really good clip, and it's not just in motorcycles. So in automobiles and electric technology, it seems to be going at an ever increasing pace. So it's not to say it won't be done. It's just being realistic that it's going to take a little bit of time.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the Moto Canada Motorcycle and Power Sports Show. How excited were you that we were actually going to have shows this year?
I was excited. I was also a little disappointed because they are the OEM, the manufacturer shows. So to see the, and I was at, you know, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, and then went out to Toronto and did a bunch of interviews to see the limited support from the manufacturers was a bit sad. You know, and I understand it's an incredible expense to attend these and also that, you know, the way supply chains are and the way demand is, you know, a lot of manufacturers really don't need any help moving their stock, you know, from distributors off of showroom floors and into your garage. But I think it's a little bit short-sighted to not be at those shows because I think, you know, just hearing from people who would stop by and talk to us at the different shows, a lot of people were really disappointed not to see, you know, their favorite brand, you know. I mean, Triumph was in attendance everywhere, so you were happy. But, you know, there was a lot of, say, Ducati people who were not happy or BMW people who were, you know, frustrated because, you know, this is where they get to see some of these new bikes. So I think there's a ways to go, but, you know, I've talked to the different people at Moto Canada, and, you know, they acknowledge that it's a little bit of starting over kind of thing. So hopefully they're going to take from this first year, have a chance to do a little bit of a recap, a postmortem, figure out what worked, what didn't work. You know, the bike shows have been doing the same thing for the 20 years that I've been doing this, you know. I mean, every Friday night is ladies' night, you know, so it's maybe time to freshen it up a little bit. But, you know, they had to restart, and it's hard to restart after being away for, I guess,
since 2020 was our last one.
Yeah, so you've got that 3-year gap in the middle, which is hard to just flick a switch and restart, so.
And it was a whole new team in the West. Mm-hmm. You know, and that came up kind of pretty quickly on them. I share a lot of the same sentiments. I've had a lot of the same, probably the same conversations with Moto Canada as you have. They're definitely ears wide open for feedback. Like on Friday, it was very frustrating the Friday at the Edmonton show to again, hear all that frustration from people about, well, it's so much smaller and where's BMW and where's Ducati, and the blame being put on Moto Canada for that, to the point where I've grabbed one of the VPs, Paul Demers, and did a live hit with him on our Facebook page to explain why they're not there. Everybody was invited. If they're not there, you have to reach out to them and show them your displeasure of why they're not there. But from what I understand, like the feedback that they've gotten, it was the first year, and you could probably acknowledge this, and this was a pain point for me, was there was no map for Calgary or Edmonton. And that's the very first time that I've been like, I don't even know where to go to find my booth because there's no map telling me where to go. But they have them in Montreal and Toronto, you know? So it's like, is the West team learning, and you know, how do they move forward with that? And I'm excited to see what they're going to try and do to change it up, because yes, it's been the same thing. I'm interested actually in your thought on this, because one of the biggest complaints was like, where's the stunt show? And I'm like, how many years in a row can you do the same stunt show? But am I alone in that thought?
People seem to like the stunt show, and it's interesting depending where you are. You know, Vancouver would do different types of stunt shows. Edmonton always seems to be the most popular for the stunt shows. You know, Toronto brings in, you know, the Highway Heathens, they used to, who are, you know, they do stuff on big heavyweight Harleys that nobody else would ever contemplate doing. So there's different stunt shows and different ones, and they seem to have each their own kind of demographic. And so I get, I mean, to me, it's like, you've seen one stunt show, you've seen them all, but that's probably being a little bit, naive or jaded, I guess. But I am also excited to see now that they've kind of, I think it was, there wasn't a lot of notice that, oh, we're doing the shows. You know, it was in the fall, they did a big press event in Toronto saying, you know, we're now Moto Canada, we're going ahead with the shows. In previous years, it's kind of like the Santa Claus parade. You know, the parade finishes and right away you're planning the next year. I think it honestly takes that long to, you know, get the vendors, get the venue, come up with the most efficient way. And so in complete fairness to the organizers, it's hard to throw together something in a third of the time that you normally have. And then, yes, with a lot of new people, because there's a lot of people who had done those shows for years who have gone. You know, different people retired, moved on to different opportunities. So you did have a brand new crew, short time period. Attendance seemed good. So there's definitely still an appetite for motorcycle shows. So we'll have to see what happens now that they have the team as a full year, as a year under their belt, and they can start planning for what's going to take it to the next level.
Yeah, poor Derek. Poor Derek. As the show manager of the West, I've been already like, hey, what about this? Hey, what about this? Or hey, maybe try this. Or hey, have you thought about it? Like, oh, I know I'm really annoying with that. But at the same time, they were doing, here's a really fun one, and then we'll say goodbye. I know in Montreal they were doing the FMQ, which is the sort of equivalent to AMSS here in Alberta. FMQ is a safety organization, but it's been established for like 50 years. And the gentleman who runs that, and I know each other. So I've been watching their like posts and stuff from the shows and everything. And they were doing AirTech vest demos like 8 times a day. And so then I found out through one of the Moto Canada people that they were trying to get Landon French into like one of these vests and have like the president of Moto Canada in one of these vests. Turns out, like I said, you know, it'd be great is as a woman with female anatomy, I would like to know how that feels when it explodes as a woman. And I've never seen anybody demo it on a woman. And so what happened on the Saturday at the Montreal show was I got sent a video from one of the VPs at Moto Canada of their VP of marketing and communications, who's female, Debbie, doing the demo and having the vest. So it was interesting because then I could get some feedback on how that would feel as a woman. And apparently they were like thrilled that this was even suggested. And then he had mentioned to me that he was going to do the demo in the afternoon. And I said, you should probably bring one of those Moto Canada helmets with you that you guys got airbrushed and done and wear that in the demo. It's like product placement, right? And so he did it. He got commended for that and then took credit for everything that I suggested that they do. And I'm going to, you know what? He's going to kill me because now I'm outing for this. But at the same time, I mean, I don't need the credit for it, but it's like, if they're getting feedback from people that care about the shows and want to see them succeed, like take those ideas and run with them and suss them out and see if it's right. Because he got a lot of compliments on thinking about putting a woman in there, thinking about having the Moto Canada helmet, you know, just those little details, but they make a difference. Absolutely. And so if you're providing feedback to them, I'm providing feedback and ideas, other exhibitors that are providing their feedback and ideas, you got to filter it out to who you think is like genius behind it. I don't need the credit, Patrick. You certainly don't need the credit. We just want to see the shows succeed.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think the good thing of that is that the things you just relayed, they actually are listening. And they're, you know, I mean, going, because it's when you're busy in the thick of it, it's things that are so obvious when you're like, you know, at the 40,000 foot level, just kind of being, you know, an armchair quarterback kind of thing, you miss them. So the positive is that, you know, when they hear these things, they're actually going, hey, wait a minute, that's a great idea. Let's, you know, let's give that a try. And not every idea is going to work, but I think it is that actually those things that you just relayed, I think actually bode well for the future of the shows that, you know, they are willing to listen and try some new things. So,
yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I know Derek is wide open for ideas and stuff too. So it's like, it's just a matter of communicating and supporting these shows. I mean, the one last thing I'll say, and then we'll, I said that last time, but I promise this time, is that I want to make it clear that people understand Moto Canada, and I know you can back me up on this, isn't actually a national nonprofit organization. And the money that they generate out of these shows gets filtered back into motorcycle programs across the entire country. I am going to have Moto Canada on the podcast to kind of explain that a little bit, but it's really important for people to realize when you're supporting these shows, you're supporting local programs as well.
Absolutely. No, it's very important to understand that.
Cool. And on that note, I mean, love talking about all the new stuff from 2024 with you. Can't wait to do it again. We should consider an electric one because I got a lot to learn on that. You have all the knowledge. So we could talk about that for later in the season. I'd have you back again.
Absolutely. Anytime.
You're my expert. So yeah, thanks again, Patrick, for always giving up some time for me.
No problem. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. And for the rest of you, keep listening. The mailbag question is up next. On today's mailbag, we have a question from Greg, one of our AMSS members. And the comment question is, I've been interested in the new Ducati Moldestrada, but the electronics, and in particular the Bluetooth syncing, has been described as finicky. How are modern bikes doing as far as their electronics packages go, and are they reliable in general for things like Bluetooth synchronization, or is it still bleeding edge technology? A lot of bikes advertise navigation systems like BMW and Ducati, but how reliable are they? Thanks very much and have a great fall. So he sent this in as we asked for questions for this year's podcast. And so I kind of held Patrick back a little bit after this episode just to get his opinion as well, because I'm not all up to speed on the electronics. One of the things that he pointed out was that those of you with Android phones, those Android programs that connect with vehicles and stuff are not being supported supported for two wheels anymore. So there could be some issues with that. Apple CarPlay is still very much supporting the two-wheel world. So in Patrick's opinion, it is stable. It's amazing. Bluetooth for navigation and music is working really well. The other thing to note is the navigation systems that come on motorcycles. Typically, you're going to get that first year free, and then it's a subscription after that. You now have to pay for it. But if you have Apple CarPlay, then you can just do everything through your phone. So I think that the technology is moving rapidly in the right direction. There's probably still some kinks to work out, but at the end of the day, Apple CarPlay is a yay. So yay for Apple users, boo for Android users, not boo in the bad way, just boo, you're not being supported. And navigation might have some concerns with subscriptions. So, and with that, that is our show for today. To make sure you don't miss out on any of our upcoming podcasts or to listen to previous ones, make sure you click on subscribe or follow wherever you get yours. If there's a topic you'd like us to cover or a guest that you think would be great on the show or a question for the mailbag, let us know. You can connect with us on all the socials, email us at info@ab-amss.org or reach out through the website at ab-amss.org. Always remember to ride smart, ride safe, and think bike. We'll see you out on the road. We'll be right back.